All right. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Scott Burton, your Tuesday host here on February 18th, 2014. Got a nice show for you lined up here today. We'll be hearing from Jerry Dugan, a Marine safety instructor, who will be telling us about a training in Seward. We'll hear about tax assistance in Hoonah from Tom Howell. We'll hear about the family support work group from the Juno Reentry Coalition. And we will also hear about wrestling in middle school from Floyd Dryden teacher, Mr. Chris Heidemann, Writer's Almanac and National Native News, music, and more here on a Juno Afternoon today.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission's recent report on a request to mine uranium in the Black Hills is not going over well with Native people. And as Jim Kent reports, both Native and non-Native groups are expressing concern over contamination of local aquifers as well as the amount of water necessary to conduct mining.
The NRC's final supplemental environmental impact statement on plans to mine uranium in the Black Hills concluded that there are no environmental impacts that would preclude licensing the PowerTech Corporation to mine the metallic chemical elements. PowerTech project manager Mark Hollenbeck has been quoted as saying the NRC decision vindicates the company's claim that uranium mining can be done safely. Dayton Hyde founded the Black Hills Wild Horse Sanctuary to protect the iconic animals as well as the land they roam, land that is sacred to the Lakota. Hyde worries that the mining will contaminate the area's groundwater. He's also concerned about the estimated 9,000 gallons of water per minute that's required for the mining process.
And South Dakota doesn't have that kind of water. The aquifers are not very big, and even the Madison isn't a huge amount of water. Not if a rancher ever filed for a well as big as the miners feel they need, there'd be a public outrage about it.
Lakota activist Deb Whiteplume says there's no going back once the water is contaminated.
And that water can never be returned into the natural water cycle because it will forever be filled with uranium and the daughter products as well as arsenic.
Despite the NRC's decision, Dayton Hyde and Deb Whiteplume have no plans to end the fight to stop uranium mining in the Black Hills. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
A federal official asks the court to grant tribal citizenship to some descendants of black slaves, once owned by members of the Cherokee Nation known as freedmen. KGOU's Kirk Gortney has the latest in the long-running dispute over citizenship.
U.S. Department of the Interior Secretary Sally Jewell filed a motion recently asking a federal court to declare that a 19th century treaty between the U.S. government and the Cherokee Nation gives certain freedmen and their descendants the same rights as Native members of the tribe. The Interior Department said a 2007 amendment to the Constitution of the Cherokee Nation, approved by its citizens, that kicked the descendants of black slaves held by tribal members out is inconsistent with the treaty. There are about 2,800 freedmen seeking citizenship rights. A spokeswoman for the Cherokee Nation says the Interior Department brief was filed in response to the tribe's own legal filing late last year. Oral arguments in the case are set for April 28th in Washington, D.C. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma says it's mourning the death of writer Robert J. Conley. The Cherokee man from the United Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians passed away over the weekend. He authored more than 80 books, short stories, and poems, which often included Cherokee history. His work has been published worldwide and appeared in multiple languages. Conley was also a teacher of Native American studies and helped develop the Word Craft Circle of Native American Writers, which promotes Native authors. Conley was recently named the 2014 award winner for lifetime contributions to Western literature by the Western Writers of America. In February 2013, Olympic champion Billy Mills received the Presidential Citizens Medal at a White House ceremony. Mills was among more than a dozen awardees recognized for their commitment to public service. The Oglala Lakota man is the spokesperson for Running Strong for American Indian Youth. The organization works to strengthen Native communities, especially young people. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org.
Join us for Kawanic's 2014 Alaska Native Art Auction, Thursday, February 20th in Anchorage, Alaska. Ticket and reservation information is available by going to nativeartauction.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, and welcome back to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 18th, 2014. On the phone with me right now is Jerry Dugan, the director of the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association. Did I get that right, Jerry?
Yeah, Scott, exactly. Or we're better known by our acronym, AMSI.
All right, and I understand that you are going to be doing a class in Seward.
Yes, on April 1st, we're going to do our probably, I think it's about 110th Marine Safety Instructor Training Workshop in Seward.
All right, so a Marine Safety Instructor, what's it take to be one of those, and how can we do that too?
Well, it's a pretty intense class. It's actually a 5.5-day class. It goes from April 1st to about noon on Sunday the 6th. And it really focuses on commercial fishing to produce instructors that can teach in their home ports some of the requirements for safety that are required of commercial fishermen around the country. But a lot of people have taken the course who are from different agencies who also teach their own agency people. And a number of school teachers have taken it as well to introduce the curriculum into their, high school or even younger curriculum.
Interesting. So a wide audience, it sounds like.
It has been. We've had people from all shades of life and from all over, actually from overseas come over for it, from Europe and Asia, and a lot of people from outside of Alaska as well. But our focus has been in Alaska, as it has been for 26 years, and there are many active instructors who, in total, train about 6,000-7,000 people a year in the, as a result of the training they've taken.
All right. And it's 5.5 days. I understand it's pretty comprehensive. What are a couple of the main things that you teach?
Well, essentially, it's help train people to teach marine safety equipment usage and emergency procedures. So there's methods of instruction that's relevant and teaching tips for teaching those topics. There's a lot of hands-on use of survival equipment like life rafts, EPIRPs, PFDs, other specialty equipment. And then a lot of practice in using those in real-life situations, like and actually doing emergency onboard drills on boats, water exercises. We talk about risk and how to assess for risk. And basically, what are the practical aspects of putting on a training like this? Because the trainings that these people turn around and teach are 1 or 2 days or more in scope. And since it is hands-on, they use a lot of equipment. So a lot of it, how do you facilitate a class that has so much hands-on training involved with it?
All right. So this training in particular is going to be in Seward, you said, begins April 1st. Is that right?
April 1st, that's right, at the FTEC Center, at the VOTEC Center in Seward.
All right. And if people want to learn more about this, I saw your website. It's is it amsea.org?
Exactly.
Okay.
And, yes, and people can find out information by going to course descriptions on the left-hand banner and looking up Marine Safety Instructor Training. So, and that's a good way to get a hold of us. All of our contacts are there. Otherwise, amsi@amsi.org, or they could call our phone number here. We're located in Sitka. It's our main office, 747-3287.
Okay. I suspect there are going to be some listeners out there who are interested in this, in our maritime communities. being safe on the water is absolutely important. If somebody's hedging on whether to become an instructor or not to go take this course, how would you convince them to do that?
Well, first of all, we're looking for people who have a marine background and experience themselves. If they're hedging on whether or not, I would probably the easiest thing is to find out what their circumstances is and what possibilities there are for doing training in their community or elsewhere by giving us a call. Because again, people come from various backgrounds, and it's helpful to talk to people to see if it's going to be a good fit for them. And basically to also let them know that it's big fun. It's the classes are a lot of fun, and it's a lot of hands-on, and people get a lot out of it, whether they end up teaching or just facilitating in some way also.
All right. Well, it sounds interesting. And again, if people want to learn more, they can go to amsea.org, or they can call 907-747-3287 to find more about this marine safety instructor training in Seward. Jerry Dugan, thank you for your time. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, just that, you know, it has had a big effect on the decrease in fatalities in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Especially in commercial fishing. So the training really results in lives saved in a very real way. And if I was going to push somebody over the edge in terms of whether they're interested or not, that's probably, a big selling point of it. It's actually effective.
Absolutely. Well, Jerry Dugan, thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much, Scott.
All right, take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
betray the handsome cabin boy. And drink success to trade, and likewise to the cabin boy who was neither man nor maid. Here's hoping the wars don't rise again, our sailors to destroy, and here's hoping for a jolly lot more like the handsome cabin boy.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. We just heard some music from Kathy Kallick, Handsome Cabin Boy, right there. And thanks to Chris Heidemann for coming in early today. Chris, welcome to Juno Afternoon. I appreciate it. Can I get you to get a little closer to that mic there, Chris? So, Chris, you are a Floyd Dryden teacher and wrestling coach.
Yeah, that's correct. I've been working at Floyd Dryden since 2007 with a little break in between to move up to Fairbanks. And I've been coaching the wrestling team with a couple other guys there for the last 3 years.
Sounds good. And you teach there, too. What subjects do you teach?
I teach Algebra 1 and Pre-Algebra.
All right. Math and wrestling. So tell us a little bit about what middle school wrestling is like. How many folks do you have wrestling, and what do you think they like about it?
Well, it's a really cool scene right now. We're lucky to have a lot of support, especially from the local wrestling club. Really, we owe our existence this year to the Tornadoes Wrestling Club. We wouldn't exist the way we do right now without their support. They've made numerous monetary donations to us, and we also rely on them for a lot of volunteer coaching support as well. Chad Requa and Josh Houston have been in, you know, day in, day out to work with our kids, and they're really experts at what they do and technique, and they help us out, whereas some of the other coaches and I, we were old high school wrestlers, but we're not quite, you know, experts on the technique. So they come in, and they really, they put a fine edge on what we do. But the kids we have right now have been working since the beginning of January, and we practice for a couple of hours every night on the weekdays, and we've had some dual meets here in town, and we were lucky enough to travel down to Ketchikan and have a tournament down there. And it's just been a really good time, you know, introducing the kids to the sport. A lot of them are first-time wrestlers, and as far as the kids that we get back year after year, it's been fun to watch them develop in their skill.
Cool. And so you were a high school wrestler. Mm-hmm. What originally drew you to the sport?
Well, I grew up in a place where wrestling was kind of non-negotiable. I grew up in Iowa, so it was a big thing there. I didn't have quite the career that a lot of the guys that I work with when I wrestled, but you know, I like the individual aspects of the sport where you're out there and your success is based on your abilities and the preparation and the work that you've put in beforehand, as well as the team aspect. It's really a unique sport where you compete alone, but you also compete for team points as a group. So you have both aspects of an individual sport and a team sport.
All right. And so you have middle schoolers. How many wrestlers do you have?
We have about 40 kids on our team right now. And we're hoping to grow the sport in town a little bit more and start to boost up the numbers that we see on the high school teams here by getting them hooked early.
And is it co-ed, boys and girls?
It is. We have we only have one girl wrestling on our team this year, but we've had more in the past, and a lot of the other teams that we see in Southeast that we'll see here at our tournament this weekend will have quite a few girls wrestling with them.
All right. So, yeah, it's the Southeast Middle School Wrestling Tournament, and that's this weekend.
It is. We've got a huge weekend of wrestling, tons of stuff going on at the Floyd Dryden Gym, and it's kind of why I wanted to come down here, is to invite everybody to come out and check out what we're doing. And hopefully sometime between Thursday and Saturday, there'll be some time that they can make it out. So we've got over 200 kids participating in the tournament, and we have wrestling Thursday night from 2 to 6, Friday from 2 to 8, Saturday pretty much all day from 9 to 8. 13 teams, like I said, coming from Southeast, as far as Juno, Floyd Dryden, and Zanakihini will be there, and we have Ketchikan, Petersburg, Sitka, Hoonah, Cake, Haynes, Craig, Thorn Bay, Yakutat, Gustavus, and Wrangell coming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Real Southeast event.
Mm-hmm.
And what can somebody expect? Will there be several matches happening at once? Will there be sort of a center match?
We'll have two mats going at the same time until we hit the finals at Saturday night at 6 o'clock. So we'll have two mats going, and all the bleachers will be out. There will be concessions. It'll be like a regular sporting event in town.
Wow, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it's probably a lot of work to organize all these schools coming in, too, I bet.
Yeah, it is, but I've had a lot of really good help. Our activities director at the school, Haifa Siddiqui, has really helped put a lot of work into organizing it, and she's helped me get, you know, a lot of the paperwork done and get a lot of things organized as far as that, so I've been able to concentrate mainly on the wrestling side of things.
All right. That's been
great.
Well, excellent. So that's going to be this weekend. You said starts Thursday after school?
Thursday. We're actually going to even start Thursday and Friday right before school ends at 2 o'clock.
Okay. Thursday and Friday and through Saturday.
Yeah.
And that's at Floyd Dryden.
Yes.
Out there on Mendenhall Loop Road, if anybody's interested. And sounds like a great Southeast gathering of wrestlers.
And I also wanted to throw a plug out, too, on Sunday. Starting in the morning and most of the day Sunday, the Tornadoes Wrestling Club is going to have a youth tournament that's going to feature a lot of young kids from around Southeast that are coming in. So these would be younger than middle school age, kind of grade school age, and up through maybe the fifth, sixth grade range that aren't wrestling with a school team yet, but they're part of the Tornadoes Club or they're part of a club in another town around Southeast, and they're going to be coming in, too, for Sunday wrestling.
All right, and if somebody's out there listening right now, Chris, and wondering if their child should get into wrestling, or maybe some kids are listening right now, I'm not sure, but what might you say to them? What could they get out of this sport?
Well, first of all, I would encourage anybody that's at all interested in wrestling to check into the Juno Wrestling Club, check into the Tornadoes, and get involved. And there are other clubs around town, too. I don't know the particulars on those, but the Tornadoes have really, you know, they're a class act. And as far as what a kid gets out of it, a kid gets a lot of pride and self-respect, and you gain a lot of self-discipline from wrestling, because there is that huge individual aspect to training yourself and knowing it's just going to be you when you go out on the mat.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like what you said about how you're out there one-on-one, but you're also working for your team. So
yeah.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for doing what you do with the kids and all of your coworkers and fellow teachers and parents. We sure appreciate it. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks to a lot of people that have helped us out really quickly. I mentioned the Tornadoes. We can't say enough about them. JRC Club is letting the out-of-town teams come in and work out for free, so we really appreciate that. Thunder Mountain High School and Dan Larson is housing a lot of our kids. Got some local churches in the valley that are housing a lot of teams, and we really appreciate that. Everybody who donated funds to us this year so we could travel, we really appreciate it. And we'd like to say thank you to David Katzik, who's going to come in and talk before our tournament.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, well, thanks again, and good luck this weekend.
You.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 18th of February, 2014. It's the birthday of Toni Morrison, born Lorain, Ohio, 1931. Lorain, steel town. Her father worked at the steel mill and in construction. Her mother raised the kids. Morrison said about her mother, when an eviction notice was put on our house, she tore it off. If there were maggots in our flour, she wrote a letter to Franklin Roosevelt. My mother believed something should be done about inhuman situations. Toni Morrison was an actor, and then she got a master's in English, and then she wrote a story about a black girl who wanted blue eyes, and that turned into the novel, The Bluest Eye, 1969. It's the birthday of Wallace Stegner, born Lake Mills, Iowa, 1909. His father moved his family around, hoping to strike it rich in a boom town out west. They moved from North Dakota to Washington State, Montana, California, Saskatchewan, settled in Salt Lake City. Wallace Stegner was just finishing his Ph.D. dissertation when his brother died suddenly of pneumonia. Not long after, his mother died of cancer, and then his father committed suicide. And Stegner, by the end of the 30s, had lost his entire family. He set out to write a book about the experience of his family. It was a big success. The Big Rock, Candy Mountain came out in 1943. He wrote about the Western experience and the need to preserve wilderness. Wallace Stegner said, "Something will have gone out of us as a people if we ever let the remaining wilderness be destroyed. We need wilderness preserved, as much of it as is still left and as many kinds. It can be a means of reassuring ourselves of our sanity as creatures, as part of the geography of hope." And it was on this day in 1678 that The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan was published, which became a huge bestseller during the author's lifetime. He was 50 years old when it came out. He was a Baptist preacher. He'd been thrown in jail for preaching because he was a nonconformist. He did not conform to the theology of the Anglican Church. He stayed in jail for 12 years. Pilgrim's Progress, an allegory following the main character, Christian, on a journey from the city of destruction, earth, to the celestial city of heaven, traveling through the slough of despond, the valley of humiliation, the hill difficulty, and doubting castle. Mark Twain mentions the book in Huckleberry Finn, where Huck says, "There were also some books piled up neatly on each corner of the table. One was Pilgrim's Progress, a book about a man who left his family, though it didn't say why. I read it every now and then and got through quite a bit of it. The sentences were interesting, but difficult to get through." Here's a poem for today, a little lyric by Lord Byron. "So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night, though the heart still be as loving and the moon still be as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath, and the soul outwears the breast, and the heart must pause to breathe, and love itself have rest. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon." Lord Byron's poem, "We'll Go No More A-Roving." That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to a Juno afternoon here on February 18th, 2014. I am joined on the telephone right now by Mr. Tom Howell, who's going to tell us about tax assistance in HUNA. Welcome, Tom.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here. And, boy, it's hard to follow Lord Byron, but we're roving here into HUNA. And we're with the Alaska Business Development Center out of Anchorage, Alaska, and we're doing volunteer tax work here in Hoonah today. We're just getting off out of the cab right now and going into the HIA tribal headquarters, where we'll be set up for this evening and all day tomorrow doing free volunteer tax work. And I'm here with two students from University of Montana, Justin John and Alyssa Hands, who are accounting students, and they'll be doing the tax work for the people here. It's a free service that we provide. We've been doing this since 1996 through the Alaska Business Development Center, and last year we serviced more than 120 villages, developed 4,000 tax returns, and generated more than $7.5 million in tax returns. All money spent in the local communities. And Alaska Business Development does this in conjunction with the VITA program by the federal government that encourages rural communities for economic development and trying to keep money in the home communities. So do you have any questions for us?
That was a lot of great information, Tom. I appreciate it. I'm glad that you were able to fly into Southeast on such a beautiful day.
Oh, this is gorgeous. We just thank you guys for giving us this wonderful weather with the snow-capped mountains and the sunshine. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's like this every day.
I said, every day, I'll bet you. Okay. Yeah. You must be from the Chamber of Commerce. Also, tomorrow, we'll be here all day tomorrow in Hoonah, and we'll be flying out on Thursday night to Cake, where hopefully we can do some tax work in the evening in Cake. And we'll be there all day Friday and Friday evening. Won't leave until Saturday morning.
All right. It sounds like a great service that you provide, helping Alaskans keep money in their pockets to spend in their local communities. Remind me again, so you're in Hoonah today. What's the, and tomorrow, what's the name of the center that you're at?
We're at the Tribal Indian Headquarters, HIA Tribal Center.
HIA Tribal Center?
Yep.
Right.
And also I want to point out that this is a free service that we put on, so we encourage everybody to come. Boy, if you had to pay for this, it would cost you usually about $200 for what we do, and it's free. So.
All right, yeah. It's a great service.
We were over in Angoon yesterday and did about 41 tax returns and saved people almost $8,000 over there and generated $25,000 worth of returns.
Yes, I'm a big proponent of having a professional do your taxes or at least help you with them. It's a great thing because tax code and all that stuff is really confusing.
It is. We're just here to help and we can simplify it.
All right, Tom, what sounds like a great thing for any of our listeners in Hoonah who want help with their taxes for free today and tomorrow, go down to the HIA Tribal Center. Mr. Tom Howell, thank you for your time. Anything you'd like to add?
Nope, just a beautiful day in Hoonah, and I'd just like to thank all the people in Angoon that were so kind to us and hospitable, and looking forward to helping the people in Hoonah and Kaysen.
All right, Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
I'm gonna be satisfied.
All right, and welcome back to a Juno Afternoon here on this beautiful, beautiful Tuesday. And with me now in the studio is Miss Katie Chapman, the Executive Director, let's see if I get this right, Katie, of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence.
That's right.
All right. And today you are here. You're the chair of the Juno Reentry Coalition.
That's right.
So which one should we start talking about, the National Council or the Juno Reentry Coalition?
We're talking about the Juno Reentry Coalition.
All right. Sounds good.
Which is made up of many, many providers in the community, to include other nonprofits. And so what we are is an association of volunteers. Some of our stakeholders are folks like the Aware Shelter, Department of Corrections. We have some representation from the Alaska Native community. We also have representation from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And we started meeting about a year ago. We all, you know, recognize this problem of the men and women who are coming out of jail. When they get out, they quickly go back into jail. And what that is called recidivism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's often a term that's being thrown out there in our community lately. And so the Juno Reentry Coalition has been meeting on a monthly basis for the last year. Our mission is to promote public safety while trying to find out the different ways we can increase these ex-offenders' well-being in our community.
All right. What are some examples of places people can go or services that people can get when they get out of prison here in Juno?
So, I mean, some examples are when a person is released from prison, that is like the most vulnerable point in time for them. A lot of times people are getting released and they don't have a place to go. And this is the problem. Like, this is the discussion that the Reentry Coalition is meeting about to discuss. Housing options aren't always available for people with criminal record histories. And so you ask about, like, well, what are some services? I can name a few, like a few of our providers in the community, like the treatment centers and other, like, behavioral health providers.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Glory Hole is there. And but that's what our whole effort is trying to identify exactly what are those resources and how do these men and women access them? Like, are they
right.
really accessible even though they're there? You know, can people really... Is it realistic for them to get that help?
Sure, sure. So it sounds like we need to grow those resources.
Absolutely.
All right. And you're going to have a forum coming up, looks like, on February 19th, which is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Tell us about it.
Well, our coalition is... so reentry is this huge issue. It's very complex. We're talking about... a lot of different parts of a person's life and getting their basic needs met. So we're looking at areas of housing and substance abuse and mental health and employment, education, family support. And essentially what we did is we broke down all of those areas and made work groups for each of those areas so that we can divvy up the tasks. And our family support work group came up with this great idea to have a family forum. And we're not really, there's really no definition for family. Like, that's open for however you consider yourself. Maybe you're a really close friend or a significant other, or close family friend, that if you consider yourself family to a person who's been incarcerated or who currently is incarcerated, then this is about you. So we're asking for people to come and just have this time and space where your voice can be heard about your experience. How have you been impacted by having a loved one being incarcerated? What services helped you in the past? Like, were you able to help your loved one get the services he or she needed? Were you able to take care of yourself and manage your stress level and, you know, get your family needs met? I think families are oftentimes a neglected part of this reentry process. When a person goes to jail, if they are a father or a significant other of somebody, maybe they were the person bringing in the main income for the family. You know, if that mm-hmm. goes away, then here you're leaving children and whoever else, like, without that income coming in. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways people can be impacted. And so that's what we want to hear about. We want to hear, how have you been impacted? What resources helped? What resources could be better? So the way that the evening will look is there will be different discussion tables on topic areas, and the individuals can go to those areas, and a facilitator will kind of just draw out that information from the family members. And then we're going to kind of end the night leaving it in the audience's hands, you know, like in the participants' hands, asking them, like, where do you want to go from here? Mm-hmm. How should we reconnect again? Because there's going to be a follow-up of some sort. We don't really know what that looks like yet, but, I mean, our hope is that the participants will help us figure that out.
Yeah. Okay, so this is tomorrow night from 6 to 8:30 at the Northern Light United Church down here in the Federal Flats.
Yeah. And there's going to be some light refreshments available, provided by Bee's Bistro. And like I said, it's open to the public. Come, you know, share your voice.
Sounds like anybody, especially somebody who's gotten out of prison and had success or not had success, but is in the community now, that would be a great candidate to go here
Absolutely.
Tomorrow night. Somebody who just wants to help, like you say, develop more resources for our community as well, any interested party. It occurred to me that mentoring programs always seem like good things, or you know, like, I don't, buddy system is the wrong word.
That's interesting you bring that up, because those work really well, and mm-hmm. we're hoping that that can happen at this venue, you know, that family members will connect. And mm-hmm. what happens outside of that room here in our community, maybe they, you know, maybe a family found some way to really get through the stresses and the challenges of this, and they can be a support for another family.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, Katie, is there anything that we're missing or something that you'd like to add? It sounds like a really great forum.
Well, just if you want more information, you can email the Juno Reentry Coalition at junoreentry@gmail.com, or you can call me at 463-3755.
3755?
Yep.
All right, Katie Chapman, thank you so much for your time today. And if anyone is interested, the event is tomorrow night at Northern Light United Church from 6 to 8:30. Everyone's welcome. And if you want more information, you can give Katie here a call at 463-3755. Katie, thank you for putting this together, and thanks for coming down today.
Thank you.
I once loved a cowboy. Not a lot to say, alone on the range for most of the day. Then he'd jump on his horse and just ride away, leave all questions and answers dangling. Once loved a diplomat, he had a way with words. He'd listen real hard, repeat all that he'd heard, with a passion for gossip and all things absurd, and a talent for science stabbing them. Love is a challenge, love is a test, love is a balance of all that you know best. There's love of the and slim, smooth and romantic.
the balance of all that you love best. There's love of the moment and love for all time. There's love beyond all reason or rhyme.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
All right, you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on 104.3 KTOO FM in the capital city. A beautiful, beautiful Tuesday outside. And we might be starting to hear some birds out there more and more. So here's Bird Note for Tuesday.
This is Bird Note. Traveling home after a flight into Seattle's SeaTac Airport, you might share a ride on the shuttle with a red-tailed hawk. That's because, to protect passengers, planes, and birds, airport biologists Steve Osmek and Bud Anderson capture raptors and relocate them away from the airport. In 2013, the biologists moved 86 hawks and falcons, including 23 red tails and 41 Cooper's hawks. Every time the biologists catch a bird, they move it far enough away that it won't come back. But with Seattle's famous traffic, especially during rush hour, each journey can take 4 to 6 hours. That's a lot of driving, particularly when you catch 3 or 4 hawks a week. That's where Bel Air Charters of Bellingham, Washington comes in. The airporter carries the hawks, at no charge, secure in covered animal carriers, north to safer foraging grounds near Bud's home in the Skagit Valley. After weighing, measuring, banding, and wing-tagging the hawks, Bud releases them in wide open country.
It's a flat farmland area. It's loaded with voles. It's loaded with shorebirds, with starlings, with ducks. And so it supports a high number of hawks. Also, there aren't too many people, and certainly no low-flying jets, so they're much safer. we take them to what we call a better restaurant.
You can learn more about Bud Anderson's decades of work with raptors at birdnote.org.
Every year, the City and Borough of Juneau's Youth Activity Board reviews grant proposals submitted by local organizations providing or desiring to provide athletic, cultural, artistic, or extracurricular academic activity programs to the youth of Juneau. The deadline application is March 3rd. For more information, please review the Youth Activities Grant webpage at juneau.org under Hot Topics. This message brought to you by the City and Borough of Juneau.
All right, have a little extra time here on a Juno afternoon today. I've been playing tunes off of a Kathy Kellick album, Reason and Rhyme, and also some stuff from Lori Lewis and her Bluegrass Pals. Here's another one by Lori Lewis called Tall Pines, and I'll come back and tell you about the weather and what's going on tomorrow on a Juno afternoon.
Thank you.
thank you for joining me today on the Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Wednesday, Ken Fix will be your host, and he'll talk with photographer Mark Kelly, who recently was one of 15 winners of an international photography competition. Congratulations there, Mark. Nate Heck from Saga will focus on their winter obstacle course. Great course out there, Malaga Harbor area. Bill Merck will be here with a preview of this month's Poetry Slam on Friday. Very cool event for sure. And we'll learn about Eagle Crest's Porcupine Lodge. That's tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon. Again, your host will be Ken Fix. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable and Digital Channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on K2 comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. As far as the weather goes, hopefully it'll stay like this through May. Let's see. Tonight, mostly clear, patchy, fog late, lows 21 to 27, northeast winds 10, shifting to the northeast. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, isolated snow showers in the afternoon, highs around 30, northeast wind 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night, cloudy, scattered snow showers, lows around 21, southeast wind 5 to 15. Thursday, cloudy, scattered snow showers, highs around 31, southeast wind to 10 miles per hour. So maybe a bit of fresh snow for the skiers there on Thursday up at Eagle Crest. Friday, cloudy, chance of snow, highs around 33. And let's see, into the weekend, mostly cloudy, lows 20 to 27, highs around 34. So staying cold through the weekend. Monday, cloudy, chance of snow and rain, highs around 36. All right. So stay tuned here. In about a minute, we'll be going to All Things Considered. By the way, is some Django Reinhardt. We heard from him some Honeysuckle Rose, and this is the St. Louis Blues. And here's All Things Considered.